everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Packers' 23-21 loss to the Washington Commanders and our film review of that game. And Eric, man, there's so much we can talk about. We're not going to have time to get to all of it. Let's kind of get to the gist of what we're writing about that'll post Tuesday morning. You know, these games come down to a lot of things. Sometimes it's scheme, you know, sometimes it's playmaking, you know, but sometimes it's just fundamentals. And fundamentals aren't just, you know, blocking and tackling. There's also catching the ball. What do you make of what happened yesterday, both sides of the ball in that area?
Well, you know, I said this to you earlier, and I'm gonna dig this old one out, that, you know, the old saying about luck is, at least the saying that I subscribe to, is that luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and the opportunities were there. So it looks to me like there's some lack of preparation. Sometimes some guys can just catch the ball. Some guys just can't. I look back at Davante Adams, and I'll tell you, his second year was really rough. But the man in practice, especially in the training camp practices that I was witnessed and watched him, he was in front of that jugs machine until, like, constantly. I know they don't have the jugs machine anymore, but I mean, the reality.
Yeah, they do. Actually, they do. I checked into it.
Do they?
And they did not, because you don't buy that robot that they tested out. You basically rent it, and it's the subscription. And they did not, they returned it. They did not subscribe to it. So they still are using the jugs machine. Now I do know, we've had some, Ryan Wood had it in one of our stories about Dobbs, and he had two or three drops, depending on how you want to count them. And apparently he works that thing pretty hard every day, but anyway, back to your point.
It just takes time, you know, and it takes a point. And you know, there's a lot of things going on, especially for a rookie. You got to run the right route. You got to make the right adjustments. Oh yeah, I got to catch the ball. And when you get that into your head, like, I got to catch the ball, sometimes your routes get ugly. Sometimes you're not making the right reads. You're not doing all the right things. So sometimes it just takes time, and you're going to have to, you know, you look at Davante Adams at that time. I was probably one of the loudest critics saying, hey, this second round draft pick can't catch the ball. Now the guy catches everything because he worked himself into that part. He used his preparation. And when the opportunities show up, he makes the most of them. Yeah. The other guy's going to have that opportunity to have the intestinal fortitude, I guess, to go out and to work on their craft to become better ball catchers. It remains to be seen. We won't know that for a while, but they got to catch the ball both on offense and defense. I mean, some of those interceptions that got dropped in the first half were actually intercepted. I mean, we're not having this discussion about a 21-24 loss.
Yeah.
It would be a much different ball game.
The one went right through Jair Alexander's hands. I mean, it was gift wrapped. I couldn't believe it. And even Douglas, he jumped the route on one. That one went right through his hands. Those are plays that change games. You just can't do that. We saw the same thing. I don't know if you watched any of the game last night, but it happened to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh dropped, I think, three interceptions, and Miami intercepted a couple of them. And that, to a large extent, was the difference in the game. I had the Packers, for after going through the tape today, probably seven drops. It could be six. There was one where it was a throw to Dobbs. And the DB, when I watched it live, I thought he broke it up. And even watching the tape, just the TV tape, it looked like it. But then they showed the replay, and I don't think the guy ever touched the ball, even though he was right there. So I gave Dobbs a drop on that one too. But anyway, three of them were on third down, and one of them was on a fourth down, and they all would have been conversions. I mean, those are drive killers. That's one of the reasons they were, what, 0 for 6 or whatever on third downs.
Right, and those things are going to – exactly that. They're the difference in ball games. They're what changes the momentum, number one, and number two, it's a stop, you know. So if they convert on a couple of those, and those will start, if they keep working, they keep doing what they need to do, a lot of times those things clean themselves up. But it's just kind of the overall mindset, you know, when I watch the game live, and both when I review it, the frustrating part for me is that killer instinct that You know, all gas, no brake, just doesn't show up. And I guess probably if they're going to be successful the rest part of that season is they got to play with a chip on their shoulder. I mean, a monster chip that's just barely hanging on by a thread. That's how they got to play. They got to play more physical at the line of the scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And the quarterback's got to find a way to get comfortable in the pocket there and realize that, you know what, this offensive line is – yesterday playing against a pretty good front four held up really good, and he's got to get confidence in those fellows and be able to feel good and stand back in there and throw the ball.
So getting back to catching the ball, here's a question. It's a big question because the trade deadline is a week from Tuesday and it's November 1st. The question is, do you trade a third round pick for a receiver who's caught a lot of passes in this league, or is that throwing good money after bad? And are they not going anywhere this season? I think we have slightly different views on this, but I just want to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, that's a great question, Pete. And I think, you know, we hear it all the time, whether you can't even turn on the radio or any type of social media, and everybody's out there clamoring for the Packers to bring in a guy. And I think at this point, I'm not so sure you do it. I think you're 3-4. You're heading into some pretty tough games. It is very plausible 3 weeks from now that they are, you know, 3-7. And do you waste a draft pick? Do you get rid of a draft pick from next year's draft? The answer to that question would be if you're going to throw a third round pick out there for a guy, do you feel that that guy is going to be better than the third round pick you're going to make next year? That's the question that they have to ask at this point. Cause I think if you think that you're one piece away from the Super Bowl, I think you go do it no matter what to get to the Super Bowl, but they're not one piece away from the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And there's, you make that trade. Also, the thing you got to calculate is how many years does the guy have left on his contract? You know, you might only get him for like another year after this year, for instance. So you're not getting him for a long time. And I completely understand that argument, and there's a lot of merit to it, and it could very well end up being right. The only thing that sticks in my mind is when I think back to 2016, they're 4-6 after, leaving that same field, FedEx Field, and Aaron Rodgers the next Wednesday says they're going to run the table, and they did. And the one thing that changed was it was actually in that Washington game, Jared Cook came back. And he made a big difference for the rest of that season. He's not a great player, but he's a good, talented player. And he made a big difference. Like he was a difference maker. He's not a difference maker, but he made a difference. And the one thing I wonder is if they can get Chase Claypool for a 3, do you do it? And could that be just enough where then with what you have in the run game and with Aaron Jones, you've got enough now where you actually have something going for you? I don't know if it's likely or not. And I could see even they make that kind of move and it helps them out a lot and they get into the playoffs, but they're still not really a legit threat to win the Super Bowl, all those things to think about. But that's the one thing that sticks in my mind about 3-4. I just don't know if I would give up on it yet. I mean, I totally understand the argument and why you don't want to throw the good money after bad. But that's the one thing that sticks in my mind is, I don't know. I'm not sure I would write it off yet. I wouldn't give up a 2 for the guy, but if they could get Claypool for a 3, I think I'd pretty seriously think about doing it.
I guess I look at the draft as being pretty darn important, and they're going to need some fresh blood. The other argument that I have in the back of my head is, are you going to blow this thing up? Are you going to make some major changes? Do you think you're only a piece or two or a season away? You know what? Maybe they think they're a season away from the Super Bowl. I mean, maybe making that, if you're going to get a receiver for more than the rest of this season, I think maybe it could make sense. I guess it comes down to that question. Is the guy you're going to trade for going to be better than the third round pick long term for your football club?
You know, and I can just hear the jokes out there right now, because people are going to start reeling off the names of the third round picks for the last 5 or 6 years. And it's pretty ugly, Burks and Sternberger and Amari Rodgers. And even Ryan this year, not that you write him off yet, but he's not playing at all. And I know there's one other really obvious one who's been, who's bombed out. I mean, they have missed, they just, I think it's just happenstance, but they have missed on a lot of third round picks in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So I can hear that the jokes I'm sure are flying about, well, trade the third rounder because they're not going to get anybody anyway. You could also say, well, they're due, right?
Right.
But yeah, that is something to think about. And Claypool, I just use him as an example because he might be the most talented guy out there who they can get maybe at a reasonable cost. But he's only got the rest of this year and next year on his contract. So they'd only be guaranteed of getting him for a year and, you know, a half. But if they liked him, they could always, you know, re-sign him after that too. But yeah, you know, he could be a receiver for him next year. So it's something to I find that and him specifically as kind of interesting. Let's get, if you don't mind, let's get back to the old line. So what'd you think of Nyman and what'd you think of Zach Tom? Nyman moving to right tackle, Zach Tom at left tackle.
I think the biggest impact was moving Jenkins back to guard. It's certainly, I mean, so you saw the difference it made in especially the pass protection. That AB gap is so vital that they make that thing's got to be a wall in order for anybody's pass protection scheme.
That's between the center and the guard, right?
Yeah. So guard, center guard, that has to be a wall. So your A's and your B gaps got to be solid. Your tackles, if they're good enough or if they're fleet of foot enough, can run the defensive ends past the quarterback. And then now you can get to that patented Aaron Rodgers step up and slide either way, in which he was able to do that. I still think he needs to, you know, he got been getting wallops the entire season. So at times I thought there were times where he looked a little bit jittery back there. And, you know, I know this is completely contrary to what I would ever say, but sometimes he might be able to make that second read and instead of getting the ball out as quickly as he probably felt he needed to. And I liked, you know, here was a thing, you know, I think probably a lot of us when we heard the game or heard the announcement of the inactives on Sunday and was that Bakhtiari was inactive, that was like, holy cow, now what are they going to do? That ship is going to sink. And I was really surprised how well Tom did. I think he's a little light and he looks lower body wise, looks like probably not as thick as an offensive line coach would dream up of your left tackle.
You know, it's, if you don't mind me interrupting, because you said that when we talked on the phone today and I hadn't rewatched the game yet. When I just got done rewatching a little while ago and I saw exactly what you're talking about, because he was going against Sweat most of the day and Sweat's 262, at least that's what he's listed at. That's a little on the bigger side for a pass rusher outside, but not really big. And there was one in the second half where he just put Tom on skates, push him right back into Rodgers, but Sweat ended up getting a hands to the face penalty on that. It was a third down on that fourth quarter drive where they scored a touchdown. But anyway, I saw exactly what you're talking about because he just pushed him right back into Rodgers in about 2 seconds.
Yeah, you want to have them to be able to drop the anchor and be able to withstand that bull rush. And sometimes it's just really tough. I mean, sometimes even, you know, the best left tackles get on skates because you still want to protect that outside edge as much as possible. But what I really liked about him was his hands kept moving and his feet can keep him in position and keep him in a spot where he's not going to kill you. He's not getting burnt off the edge, which is where is really painful because that's when the guy gets a full head of steam and can, you know, tear your quarterback into two and try and separate his spine from his body. And so you did see any of that. You saw him being able to run the quarterback past him. And I thought in the run game, being able to go up and get backers, he was pretty good at. And I was surprised, quite frankly. And Nyman, you know, everybody thinks, well, if you can play a left tackle, you can play right. But it's different. It's everything's backwards. So instead of stepping with my left foot, I'm kick stepping with my right foot. You know, so sometimes, again, into the mental part of the game, instead of just playing football, you're thinking about where does my hands go? Where do my feet go? And it looked very, very, very fluid. Certainly, I think he would like to have some of the run blocks back, but the stupid mental mistakes weren't there. And I really liked it. Now there was one in particular where between Jenkins and Myers where they messed up on a run play on a point.
Is that the one where they both went off to the linebacker and yes. Early in the second half, I think, and they let the guy and they just stoned Jones right at the. That was the one where Jones ended up running around and Rodgers got knocked down and he lost about 5 yards. And they both jumped out to the linebacker. I wondered what happened there.
If you make that block, that play goes for an awful long ways, and that's the bad part. Is there's so many of those. That's the frustrating part when you're watching the run game is it's unfortunately more frequently than in years past it has been Mercedes Lewis on the edge when they're trying to get to the perimeter or they're trying to hit the C gap. But that play in particular was painful, and I think that's a communication play. What should have happened is Meyer should have stayed on that tackle and Jenkins goes up to the backer, but they I am convinced we'll get cleaned up as they play together more. Again, what do you think practice and game speed is just way different.
Yeah, right. And so what are you in the camp of that Stenovich has to spend more time in the offensive line room and basically even though he's
in the camp, I think I built it, Pete. I mean, yeah, might have. look at this. That last year, the last couple of years, they'd go injuries. I mean, Bakhtiari, Jenkins, just rattle them off. The guys were dropping like flies. Turner, and they just insert guys. Nyman, Newman. I think Runyon was one of them. Then they had to substitute for Myers when he was down. And the offensive line never really skipped a beat. It kept going and they were able to be very effective, especially in pass blocking. And this year you see run blocking, the guys are taking the wrong steps. They're going opposite directions. They're not able to deal with any type of twists up front. I think there's something there that, you know what? Yeah. He needs to spend more time with that offensive line group because he proved to me one of the things that when he got the job in Green Bay, we were all kind of wondering. He's never been a professional offensive line coach.
Yeah, he was always an assistant. Yeah, he'd only been coaching for like 4 or 5 years.
Right. So could he do the job? And I think he answered the call. And now that he's up at the offensive coordinator level, you know, he might need to spend some more time in that O-line room or at practice there with the O-line. I think I remember Joe Philbin used to be down by the offensive lineman quite a bit too, when he was the old coordinator, but I can't substantiate as to what that percentage was, but I remember in training camp being surprised at how much time he spent down by the old line. He was a good old line coach, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. That was his area of expertise. So yeah, I'm guessing we'll see more of that. I mean, offensive coordinators have a lot of behind the scenes duties as far as game planning, as far as handling the install of the game plan each week. They're the ones who deliver it in the offensive meetings. So they have, you know, it's a lot of duties, but it does seem like, you know, that line that the play has slipped, obviously. And it does seem like that's one of the few answers they have left besides the personnel change.
Oh, sure. And they lost, you know, they got two other really important coaches, Hackett and Getsy are both out of town now too. So, you know, that's could be some pretty big losses there. And Stenovich is a young guy. You know, I proved himself as an O-line coach, and maybe this is just too much. I don't know, because the offense certainly is a struggling aspect, and it doesn't appear to be getting so much or much improvement. A little bit, but there's just a little bit that's off. So,
you know,
I still think there's something there.
I was kicking this around in my head yesterday or a couple days ago. You know, Hackett's struggling, obviously, big time running an offense in Denver, but I wonder if LaFleur misses him. You know, there's this whole dynamic, you know, the people who study these things, you know, where you have a partnership or where, you know, people in offices talk and it kicks off ideas, just speaking with someone, especially someone you trust a lot. And I wonder if LaFleur misses Hackett and the brainstorming sessions they might have had, or Getsy, or both of them, and that those brainstorming sessions aren't the same as they are with the new coordinator. Just sometimes it's that dynamic of talking that brings out ideas that otherwise would not have come out. I wonder if that's an issue, and if LaFleur has maybe lost something there with the loss of those two guys.
Yeah, I think certainly and probably more so on this, the communication of the implementing of the the install, the plays, because there's it's not like it's one person or one thing. It's systemic. You know, there's guys not lining up right. There's the famous, you know, recently we saw Rodgers telling 84 to get into the right spot. You know, the sound system picked up Rodgers telling Mr. Myers to snap the ball. All those fun things you can tell it's just happening. And the way the offensive line is has kind of had a lot of miscues, especially on movement defenses where they're moving defensive linemen or they're doing stunts. They struggled with that. So, I think there's something to it, and maybe they're just kind of getting you know, the wheels underneath them. But hopefully, for Packer fans, that they get it figured out quick.
Yeah, it's they're beyond in trouble now. Their season's on the line here in the next couple of weeks, and they could easily go into Buffalo next week. They, you know, I mean, they're 9.5-point underdogs. It'll be a shocker if they don't come back from that one 3-5. Well, there was so much to talk about. There's a lot we didn't get to, but we're out of time here, Eric, so we're going to have to run. But rest assured, we'll be back next week after the Packers play at Buffalo. There'll be obviously lots to talk about with that game. And so we'll keep you up to date on what we garner from watching the film. And glad everybody joined us. And take care, everybody. This has been the After for the Review podcast.